Google Maps and GPS apps have transformed paper road maps from necessities into quaint artifacts of a bygone era. While the tools we use to navigate may be changing daily, humans have been making maps since the first cave drawings. A new exhibit at the Institute for the Study of the Ancient World gathers 30 objects from Greco-Roman antiquity that laid the foundation of modern map making. In its review of the show, the New York Times explained that the philosophical Greeks measured the world by the stars, the practical road-building Romans by milestones. Dr. Jennifer Chi is the Institute's exhibitions director and chief curator, and Roberta Casagrande Kim is the guest curator for this show, and I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show. Hello.
Thank you for having us.
How much did the ancient Greeks and Romans actually know about geography?
Well, quite a great deal. As a matter of fact, they already knew that the Earth was a globe, and they had quite a sophisticated system for measuring, and so they came up with a quite good approximation of the circumference and diameter of the Earth itself.
So if they knew that the Earth was a globe, how did we wind up with the flat Earth theory?
That's a very good question. I think this theory was inflated toward the medieval, in the medieval period. As a matter of fact, geographers also in the medieval period believed that it was a globe.
Now, what kinds of map-making techniques were there back then? What were they like?
Well, we know of ancient Greek and Roman maps mostly from the cartographers that wrote treatises about it. So we know that they were scaled and they were made in proportion. Unfortunately, we don't have any actual artifacts surviving from the Greek and Roman period.
So we don't know how accurate they were in the areas that they were most familiar with?
We think we can assume they were pretty accurate because, as I said, they were strictly based on geometry. So they were really careful in scaling down bigger land, but also the representation of smaller lands.
Well, the maps that you have in the exhibit are of certain areas that they would have considered more important or just the ones that have survived?
Well, the areas of
Palestine,
the north.
Palestine, for example.
Yeah, well, the maps that we have in the show, first of all, are Renaissance maps. They were built upon the knowledge of the geography of the second century. So Renaissance map maker would go back to the test of the second century and follow the instruction of the geographer. And they represent the own known world. So from Britain all the way to Sri Lanka, which was the world as they knew it in Greek and Roman period.
Jennifer, to what extent did imagination influence map making in these times?
Well, as Roberta said, there is a general understanding in antiquity in the Greek and Roman periods of the earth from Britannia all the way to Sri Lanka. But outside of that, they really didn't know what to expect. And there is...
Columbus didn't know what to expect.
That's right. And the way in which they were able to, I think, psychologically, and that's one of the things that I think is brought out in the show, is the psychology of map making. It's not just looking at cartography, but the actual way in which ancients perceived the world. One of the ways was to use mythology to define these unknown areas. And that's something that's very exciting about the show and where we do use ancient objects to bring out the mythological side of map making.
Wasn't map being also used as a propaganda tool?
That's right, particularly during the Roman period. And it starts with Augustus, who uses the globe as a way representations on coins and in his art, with himself sometimes standing with his foot on top of the globe to say, I am the world leader, that the Roman Empire controls the furthest extents of the known lands of this world.
So Augustus replaces Atlas? In a way, although he's on top and Atlas is on the bottom.
Approximates himself to Atlas.
Now, Roberta, you spoke about the cognitive side underlying mapping in the New York Times. What were you referring to?
Well, I think that from the extant evidence, we can argue that there was a shared geographic knowledge, and therefore individual of all level of society had a certain understanding of space and the way in which they moved in space. And one way we can see that in the exhibition is by showing a reproduction of a map that somewhat explains how in ancient time people were moving through space. and therefore they had to know intimately the space in which they were moving.
And they understood that we were on a globe because they understood the whole concept of the horizon, didn't they?
Indeed, indeed. So through the measurement that we were talking before, they were able to argue that the Earth was a sphere, and therefore they knew how to circulate in that.
And I gather that there was at least one Greek scientist who came pretty close to approximating the size of the Earth.
Yeah, there is actually more than one, and it's interesting they were bickering about it. So there are we know several different theories. So Eratosthenes in the 3rd century thought that the Earth was actually bigger than what we know it is, but then Ptolemy in the 2nd century after Christ was arguing that it was actually smaller. So there was a very intense dialogue among geographers about this issue.
Jennifer, what do you think are the highlights of the show? I know there are 50 objects, so they're all your children.
Right, right. I mean, we were really fortunate to be able to work with New York institutions like the Morgan Library and Museum and the New York Public Library, and there's some extraordinary manuscripts from those two collections. One is a manuscript by Beatus di Lebana that shows an early Christian rendering of the world, and in that is embedded all sorts of Christian iconography, but using a kind of classical representation of the Earth. And then we have a Renaissance representation of Ptolemy's Geographia showing the world as it was known to the ancient Greeks and Roman, and that is very exciting.
Did map making get any more sophisticated between the ancient world and the Renaissance?
No. As a matter of fact, in the Renaissance, they had to go back to Ptolemy. And as I was saying, one of the interesting characteristics of the manuscript that Jennifer was referring to is that the Renaissance mapmaker read the theoretical chapter in Ptolemy and followed Ptolemy's instruction in creating his own map.
Is this the first time the Peutinger map has been on public display?
Well, this is just a replica because, of course, the map is in Austria and doesn't travel because of the condition. But in terms of one-to-one replica, absolutely, yes.
And what is the significance of that map?
Well, first of all, the size of it, because if the visitor will come by and will see that it's over 20 feet long by 1 foot tall. And so it raises all sorts of questions. Is this a proper map? Is this a propaganda piece, as the coins we were discussing before? And what was used for? Absolutely is interesting from the perspective that, as we were saying, it's showing the all-known world. And there is a particular emphasis on roads, on streets. And so, you know, introduces the issue that oftentimes in the Roman and Greek period, space was perceived in terms of wayfinding.
Now, later in Vermeer's paintings, for example, maps appear as works of art on the wall. Were they perceived as such in the ancient world?
Well, if we think that this Peutinger map you were referring to was a presentation piece, and this is one of the hypotheses of the scholars of antiquity, then this would have been placed in a tetrarchic palace and would show the importance of the emperor and the control of the emperor over the world. So in that sense, it would be indeed a work of art.
My guests are Roberta Casagrande Kim, who's guest curator for an exhibit called Measuring and Mapping Space, Geographic Knowledge in Greco-Roman Antiquity. It's at the Institute for the Study of the Ancient World and will be open until January 5th. Also with us is Dr. Jennifer Chi, who is the Institute's Exhibitions Director. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. You mentioned the coins. There are also vases. Now, how do vases play a role in map making?
Yes.
Every kind of Greek pottery possible.
We thought it was important for our visitors to realize that geography had an impact on different level of ancient life. So whereas there is not a map drawn on the vases you can see in our exhibition, there are mythical animals like the griffins that were perceived by Greek and Roman viewer as living at the northern fringes of the world. So the scene on the vessels inspire the viewer and to imagine a geographic location for these episodes. In that sense, they are speaking about imaginary geography.
Mm-hmm. And Were they thinking about it in terms of imaginary geography, do you think?
It's very interesting because in most of the ancient geographic treatises, the geographer themselves are describing the actual world side by side with the imaginary world. So we have the feeling that the border between imaginary and real was actually quite blurred.
Now, the Greeks and the Romans both traveled a lot. The Greeks settled in France at one point. Mm-hmm. Did they create some of the great early vineyards in France? And they had their own wars. And then the Romans, of course, set out to conquer the world. Later, Alexander set out to conquer the world. Did they use maps in these endeavors?
We know as a fact that they had with them surveyors. The general especially would bring along professional individuals that would be able to survey the land so that, you know, the military would be able to travel along. And we know from written sources that they had some sort of map. We don't know how specific or how detailed these maps would have been, but it's an educated guess to suggest that, yes, indeed, they had maps with them.
In the case of the map of Palestine, was that because it played such an important role in the mind of, the early Christians?
The case of the map of Palestine, again, we are looking at ancient geography through the eyes of the Renaissance. So I would say that the emphasis on Palestine is more on the Renaissance part. But we know that the volume of Ptolemy was meant to be illuminated by maps of different areas of the known world.
When did maps start looking like the maps that we know now?
That's a very difficult question. We can assume that already Greek and Roman maps would have looked similar to ours in terms of scale and projected representation of space.
So I would recognize Greece or Italy or France.
Absolutely.
Or the British Isles.
But I think the other interesting aspect that comes out in the exhibition is that they also had things called itineraria or paraploi, which were listings of points along a certain route. And that is very similar if you think about the way in which we look at maps with our apps on our phone. If we call up MapQuest or something and we type in an address and we want to know from the location that we're at to where we're supposed to be going, they give us a point-by-point route. We know that Greeks and Romans actually had these too. So in a way, looking at geographic space is very similar to the way we do.
Do we know if any of the other ancient civilizations also engaged in mapmaking? In Mesoamerica, for example, or in China?
Yes, absolutely. The geographic tradition in China was very wide-ranging, and we also know that before the Greek and the Roman, the Babylonians were interested in some sort of representation of space. The big problem, of course, is that being the maps built on fragile material, they did not survive most of the time.
Although a number of the things in the exhibit are on stone, they're carvings.
Yes, well, one of the most famous from the Roman period is, of course, in Rome, would be the Forma Urbis, which was a very large-scale map of the city of Rome, made on marble slabs. Unfortunately, that one couldn't come to New York.
I mentioned that map-making probably began in the caves. Is that because humans want to know where they're going and where they've been?
I think that's a big part of human psychology, that we want to know how to get from point A to B. We want to have the security of having something with us to provide us with that structure to get there.
And we also want to know how to get back home.
That's right.
Thank you both so much for being with us. Dr. Jennifer Chi is the exhibitions director of the Institute for the Study of the Ancient World, which is now exhibiting Measuring and Mapping Space, Geographic Knowledge in Greco-Roman Antiquity. The show is open until January 5th. Also, Roberta Casagrande Kim is the guest curator for the show, and it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you
very
much for having us.
I suggest that everybody go, because it's just fascinating.
Thank you again.